wonderful and so effective. I'd like to read something. It's on page 111, the next of devotion. The chapter 13 begins repeating that list, the last five of the list of 64 items, just to see if anyone can recall from memory. What are the five most important aspects of sadhana bhakti, or important features of the 64 items of devotional service? Which five are the most important? You have to be in those all five of them. Yes. There's one. Living in the holy Dham. That comes at the very beginning of the list. These are five, see if I can find that section. How to discharge devotional service. From Hari Bhakti Vilas, he mentions the basic principles as follows. Number one, accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. Two, becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. Three, obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. That's the first three out of 64. Of course, this is the first three out of a list of 10 that are directly taken from Hari Bhakti Vilas by Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada's comment after that list of 10, these 10 items are preliminary necessities for beginning the discharge of devotional service in regulative principles. That's Vaidhi Bhakti. In the beginning, if a neophyte devotee observes the above-mentioned 10 principles, surely he will quickly make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. The next set of instructions are also 10. Rigidly give up the company of non-devotees. Should not instruct a person who is not desirous of accepting devotional service. Should not be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples and monasteries. Not earn profit by reciting Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, so on. The comment on those 10 principles. Without following the above 10, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service and practice. Out of the 20, the first three, namely, accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him, serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important. The next items. Then it gives a list of 44. So 44 added to the first 20 makes 64. The comment at the end of the 64 items is, now, the total regular principles come to an aggregate of 64. As we have mentioned, the first are primary, 10 regular principles. Then come the 10 secondary regular principles added to these 44 items, altogether 64. Out of these 64 items, 5 items are very important. So you, Yadupriya got one of them. Living in the holy Dham. Number 2. Yes. Huh? Nope. Krishna Pita knows all of them, I'm sure. Chanting the holy name. Worshipping the deity, that's 3. What was that one? Associating with devotees. And the last one? Wait a minute. You're the penalty box for today. Okay. He said it, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll go through them again. First one, Yadupriya, living in the holy Dham, Krishna Kripa, chanting the holy name, worshiping the deity, associating with devotees. And the penalty box man there? Srimad Bhagavatam. So that list appears in chapter 6. It appears again in chapter 12 and again in chapter 13. Those five items. Three times means very important. So, two comments about this. I'll just read what Prabhupada has written. Chapter 13 begins expressing again these five things, and quotes are given. How transcendental advancement takes place. I'll read some of the quotes. They're very nice. Rupa Goswami writes, "My dear foolish friend, I think that you have already heard some of the auspicious Srimad Bhagavatam, which decries seeking results of fruitive activities, economic development, and liberation. I think that now it is certain that gradually the verses of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describing the pastimes of the Lord will enter your ears and go into your heart." This follows the verse where he warns, if you're at all attached to material life, don't go to that place, the Keshigat in Vrindavan, where Krishna is there holding his flute, attracting the minds of all living entities. If you want to keep your material life, don't go there. Then he says, I think it's too late. I think you've already heard some of Srimad Bhagavatam. And after hearing that, it's finished because the 10th canto will completely take your mind away from your material activity. Similarly, there's a statement about hearing and chanting the Maha Mantra. Quote, it is said that saints have been able to hear the vibrating strings of the Veena in the hands of Narada, who is always singing the glories of Lord Krishna. Now the same sound vibration has entered my ears, and I am always feeling the presence of the Supreme Personality. Gradually, I am becoming bereft of all attachment for material enjoyment. And again, Rupa Goswami gives another description of Mathura, residing in the holy Dham. I remember the Lord standing by the banks of the Jamuna River, so beautiful amid the Kadamba trees, where many birds are chirping in the gardens. And these impressions are always giving me transcendental realization of beauty and bliss. Unquote. This feeling about Mathura Mandala and Vrindavan, described by Rupa Goswami, can actually be felt even by non-devotees. Got that, Prankara? Yeah. The places of the 84 square mile district of Mathura are so beautifully situated on the banks of the river Jamuna that anyone who goes there will never want to return to this material world. These statements by Rupa Goswami are factually realized descriptions of Mathura and Vrindavan. All these qualities prove that Mathura and Vrindavan are situated transcendentally. Otherwise, there would be no possibility of invoking our transcendental sentiments in these places. Such transcendental feelings are aroused immediately and without fail after one arrives in Mathura or Vrindavan. So, with these 64 items of devotional service, we can understand that they're items of sadhana bhakti because they're bearing transcendental potencies of Krishna. And sadhana means the means of achieving something. So if love for Krishna is the something that we're wanting to achieve, the means is associating with Krishna in various ways. Just like the association with devotees. This is one of the five. So associating with devotees, five most important items of devotional service. Because devotees are also transcendentally potent. They are carrying potencies of Krishna. They're bearing that. Because in their heart they're carrying thought of Krishna and love for Krishna, so their association means when some of that spills on us. And then there's another section here, immediate next paragraph, because many, many, many wonderful things have been described. Like taking of Charanamrita and how one gets transported to another place just by taking Charanamrita to Vaikuntha. Or smelling the incense and flowers offered to the deity. Or taking prasad, or touching the deity, or reciting prayers. Transcendental potencies are invested there. Here's one, very nice, very short. Offering a favorite article. Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, page 98 if you're looking it up. My dear friend, Krishna tells Uddhava, if someone offers me the best thing in his possession, or anything which is very pleasing to him, he will be eternally benefited. So when we were discussing this verse in Vrindavan in one class, we went around the room and asked everybody, think of something that's you're very attached to. You like a lot. And then think how you can give that to Krishna. Of course, some things we shouldn't like so much, and you can't give them to Krishna. Just thinking in that way, it's transcendentally potent. One's consciousness becomes elevated. So in these activities, it's bringing one to Krishna, making one from Krishna's side, making one more dear to him. So this description that we just read is saying that because Vrindavan and Mathura are factually filled with transcendental potency, or any of these items are filled with transcendental potency, they're so vital, valuable in sadhana bhakti. A whole group of devotees just came back from spending time in Vrindavan. Ask any one of them, how was it in Vrindavan? They want to grab you by the hand and take you there. Or devotees who have attended these institutes, and you go back to wherever you... How was it, Prabhu? Oh, you have to go next time. It's so nice. These opportunities are very, very valuable. So, now here's a paragraph where Prabhupada explains how valuable. In these statements about devotional service, sometimes it may appear that the results have been overestimated. But actually there's no overestimation. I'm reading from page 111. Some devotees, as revealed scriptures give evidence, have had immediate results from such association, although it is not possible for all. For example, the Kumaras immediately became devotees simply by smelling the incense in the temple. Now we sometimes hear about people saying, well, I really liked visiting the temple. One thing I noted particularly was how nice it smelled. Isn't it? You hear that, Radhika Raman?
I prefer personally that I come to both. It's like it's an incredible mystical thing, but then I open the door and back from the house, just completely like it's something which I remember for a long time. Back in Paris, I tried working in Boston for about 3 years or 2 years, and I never forget the smell of the temple. When I came back, it just brings all these experiences back,
recall.
Yeah.
Dilvamangala Thakur, simply by hearing about Krishna, immediately gave up his beautiful girlfriend and started out for Mathura in Vrindavan, where he became a perfect Vaishnava. So these statements are not overestimations, nor are they stories. They are actual facts. But they are true for certain devotees, and not necessarily do they apply to all. These descriptions, even if considered overestimations, must be taken as they are, in order to divert our attention from the fleeting material beauty to the eternal beauty of Krishna consciousness. And for a person who is already in contact with Krishna consciousness, the described results are not unusual. Now here's a couple of quotes where Prabhupada is also commenting on this. This is a lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam, 1974. These are not exaggerations, but actual fact. We have to take it in good faith. Then we'll make advancement in spiritual life. Otherwise, if we think these things are exaggerations in the Shastra or by the devotees, that is aparad, offense. This is one of the offenses in chanting the holy name, to take this, the glories of the holy name, as exaggeration. Here's another quote. This is taken from Rajavidya, where the title of the chapter is Knowledge of Krishna's Energies. It may be noted at this point that the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is especially meant for those who have already accepted Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, it is meant for his devotees. If one does not accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme, this ninth chapter will appear as something different from what it actually is. As stated in the beginning, the subject matter of the ninth chapter is the most confidential material in the entire Bhagavad Gita. If one doesn't accept Krishna as the Supreme, he will think the chapter will be a mere exaggeration. This is especially the case with the verses dealing with Krishna's relationship with his creation. It's very difficult to understand this topic of Krishna and Krishna's energies. What to speak of his spiritual energies. I want to read each day in the next few days. We have just 3 days remaining, counting today. The description from Madhurya Kandambani about Ruchi, Asakti, and Bhava. We just discussed it a little bit. This is beyond the stage of all of us in this room, but it's to be understood as not exaggeration, each of these successive stages, and that it's attainable by any one of us, each of us, all of us. And the more any one of us moves closer towards this stage, the more it helps every one of us towards this stage. So here is just some quotes. This is, as I read yesterday, it was from Madhurya Kandambini, and the translation has been done by Banu Swami and gone over by a number of our Vaishnav Bengali scholars. Here's how the chapter begins, describing Ruchi. When the golden coin of bhakti, shining effulgently by the fire of steady practice and propelled by its own energy, becomes fixed in the devotee's heart, Ruchi appears. He says that, unlike in the previous stages, constant performance of hearing and chanting does not result in even the least fatigue. Ruchi is a stage that's very, as he says in the next sentence, is very effective and very quickly produces the next stage of asakti, or attachment to the activities of hearing and chanting, to the activities of devotional service. So Ruchi is characterized by a strong taste or liking. More than liking is attachment. So very strong liking. He then says that Ruchi is of two types. Now, you can refer to these 7-8 pages that we handed out. It's summarized here also. Ruchi is of two types. One where it depends on how nicely
the elements of devotional service are arranged. How nicely the ornamentation of the deity is made. Therefore, how much I appreciate the worship of the deity. Or, depending upon how nice the instrumentation is during bhajan or kirtan, I become attracted. Or when someone is speaking, how poetic and nicely they use their words. So, you're in the penalty box. Person in the second category doesn't care so much for the elements of glorification of Krishna as much as the very spirit of that glorification. A person with a second type of ruchi will experience great pleasure whenever and wherever there is a performance of kirtan. He does not depend on the excellence of the elements because he has actual depth in his taste. He has no trace of impurity in his heart. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically says that this is the attraction specifically for the ornamentation aspect or the arrangement of the elements is an impurity of the heart. Remember reading some statement by Bhaktisiddhanta that he had several disciples who could sing very nicely, but he particularly liked the singing of one devotee who could hardly carry a tune because his devotion was very, very strong. And one could sense that devotion in his kirtan, and that was attractive to Bhaktisiddhanta. And then he would comment that those who are needing nice arrangement, this is not so elevated. There's one I went to earlier today, that some nice Indian man in Harrisburg, once he invited us to his home, and he appreciated the kirtan very much. And he said, for those of us who are materialistic devotees, we require things that are very nicely packaged. You, as very attached devotees, you can sit and study Bhagavad Gita for hours and be very, very happy. But we're materialistic devotees and we need things that are very, very nicely presented. He understood this principle. So, at least for our benefit, there's no harm. I remember Prabhupada arranging kirtan performers who were the best singers and not necessarily persons in the best Krishna consciousness. There was one servant who was having a great difficulty keeping the four principles. And in part to encourage him, and in part because he was a very fantastic kirtan singer, Prabhupada had him leading kirtan. So, because that was our position, we got fired up when we heard a nicely intonated voice singing the Maha Mantra. But the explanation is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that in advanced stages of taste, the taste is not for the elements, the taste is for the bhakti that's there. In the singing or in the worship of the deity, just like in Vrindavan, you can go to some temples and see the deity is not kept very nicely, or you can see where the deity is kept very nicely, and the kept very nicely is not just that they have the newest and finest of ornaments, but there's some sense of that great devotion there in the worship of the deity. Or you can see also the neglect. Let me just finish this section. One which depends on
the
excellence of the elements.
And the other, no,
the other is without that consideration. Great pleasure is there simply because glorification of the Lord is taking place. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says there's a in this ruchi, there's a deep sense of regret for my previous condition of life. It's longer, but I'm going to just shorten. Not practicing any anga of bhakti, I have simply manifested lack of energy. So deceitful I am, such as my sense of taste, such is my sense of taste that I lick up acrid-tasting profane gossip like nectar and remain apathetic to hear the names, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. How unfortunate I am. When I start to hear about the Lord, I comfortably fall asleep. And at the opportunity for vulgar discussion, I prick up my ears and become wide awake. In this way, I have contaminated the assembly of devotees and everything else. Old and bent as I am, what sinful acts have I not performed? Hearing these lines, it's very reminiscent of so many Vaishnava songs, where feeling some regret for my previous conditions, describing it in the present tense even. I do not know what type of hell I will have to suffer for all my activities, unquote. In this way, the devotee will despair over his previous state of consciousness with a taste of disgust. Then, in a remote place, like a swan, he'll begin tasting and speaking reverently the nectarine topics about the Lord, the juice from fruit of the desire tree. He will converse constantly with devotees to the exclusion of all other topics. Then, I don't understand this. First standing, then sitting, finally entering. He will take refuge in the Lord's Dham and will fix himself purely in the Lord's service. Ignorant people will think he is going crazy. And so on. So very, very powerful is this stage of ruchi or taste when, as the opening line indicates, this stage comes by the fire of steady practice of sadhana, and also by the power of devotional service itself. So we've mentioned both of these now. The power of devotional service itself is, as anarthas are eliminated, a strong taste awakens or arises. So,
we see a lot of, well, when you read the descriptions, especially like I've been reading recently Chaitanya Bhagavat, and you read the descriptions of really intense.
Can you hear him from over there?
A really intense emotions and, you know, on the highest levels of emotion in it. I don't know. I see the devotees are really serious. They're focused on the process. And what does it take to you can get to would you say that devotees are anishta? Okay.
Would you say?
Yes.
Nishta is a stage when anarthas are practically gone.
Practically.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm looking for where
I. What's your question?
What's it take? Why is it that you know that the progressive stages are when you see serious practitioners engaged?
I could say something. I'm not sure I'm understanding your question. I'll try to say your question back to you.
Why aren't there more persons or at least
like the characters in Chaitanya Bhagavat?
At least somewhere
because it's rarely achieved.
Yeah.
ruchi.
Because it's rarely achieved. Krishna's, this is in the first chapter of Nectar Devotion. It's rarely achieved. Devotional service in general is rarely achieved. In the higher stages of devotional service, they're even more rare to find them. So, back to our Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Samvidho, all the more important it is to seek out that association. And not very many people even want that association. They're happy with Kesara Sara. So what I'm trying to do here is a little, you know, kind of stir it up. Because it is very important to have that association. Now, one of the next things that we're going to do in the class is discuss, you know, back down to earth, just real practical problems that some of the devotees have written. You know, problems that they're dealing with in day-to-day, you know, balancing their grihastha life with their trying to be strong sadhakas, etc. Or different problems where there's shortages of manpower in a temple and there's hardly time to, you know, do the basics sadhana wise. You know, here we are in nice Gitanagari Dham, and then when we go back to our place of service, something like Mother Vijay said. The handwriting?
I was going to ask something similar to what Kiladara asked, whether you thought there was anyone in ISKCON on the stage of Ruchi, and since it seemed like such a rare stage, it seemed almost like, do you have to come to Pringle before you go back to Godhead? It sounds like that, but at the same time, we hear the voice like, Gauri went back to God, and it didn't look like she was in Ruchi. You know, you hear on the one hand, if you just remember Pringle in time of death, you go back to God, and it's possible we might be able to do that. But
well,
you have to both remember Krishna and be on the stage of love of God.
Yeah.
What's our chances by
end? What did Prabhupada write at the time of Jayananda's passing?
He wasn't totally clear that.
Yes, that's right. Either he did this or did that. You remember exactly, Parampara? He has either gone to the heavenly planets or he has gone back to Godhead.
But then he concluded that because he was hearing the tape, that he went back to God.
You hear that? Because he was hearing the holy name at the time that he left his body, he went back to Godhead.
So even though a person may not have come to Ruchi or Sati, but at the end, the holy name is there.
We should understand from that the holy name, I was listening to a Krishna book the other day when Yudhisthira is asking Narada. No, Shukadeva is being asked the question by Maharaj Parikshit. How is it? Well, he's narrating, and Yudhisthira is asking Narada, at the time of the Rajasuya sacrifice, how is it that Shishupal achieved Sayuja Mukti when he was so sinful, he was so vicious, such strong animosity towards Krishna, whereas transcendentalists who are living very austerely, trying with their full might to be, you know, detached, and they, you know, very rarely will they get it. Look at the Shishupal. He just got Sayuja Mukti. And we all saw it before our very eyes. His spirit soul entered into the body of Krishna. How amazing. Narada said, I've already answered this question. It's in the seventh canto. Some reference, have to look it up. I'll look it up later, try to get you that reference, where he described that the power of the holy name is so great that even in derision the potencies are sufficient to bring one to liberation. This is the statement by Haridas Thakur in the discussion with the priests. What's his name? Gopal Champu Chapala. How is this? So that's the potency of the holy name. The statement about Jayananda's passing is in reference to that. It's not an exaggeration. The problem is, in Nectar Devotion, the section that I just read you from, is in page 111, the problem is, immediately after getting such great purification, one goes on, the next moment, commits some nonsense. But the holy name is sufficient. The potency of the holy name is sufficient to eradicate all sins by that performer. Now we have a big stockpile. But if in that moment, that's very, very fortunate. Yes?
Is that even if you're hearing the holy name not being chanted purely?
I don't feel qualified to answer that. I mean, the holy name is the holy name. That's Nam Abbas, Machudanam. That's sufficient for liberation. The overall idea is, on the one hand, these transcendental activities are filled with transcendental potency. In the holy name of the Lord, all of Krishna's transcendental potencies are invested in fullness. Unfortunate as we are, we don't have attraction for them. So on the other hand, there's effort necessary when we're coming in contact with these transcendentally potent activities to take them up, as it's described in this mood of mentioned here with Ruchi, with a great humility of repentance for a past condition, and yet going fully forward in our devotional activities. Okay, so I want to try to take up some of the questions that have been... Is any other discussion on these points? I'd like to take up some of the questions that have been asked.
So then you'd say that in Archanyavitisya, it's very advanced also then.
Of course.
It might be very advanced for all of you. And so that would you say that there means, you know, that an archivist is not.
Sure.
Right. That's before Nishtha, right?
Yeah. Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava. That's advanced. When one is concentrating in one's devotional practice to rid entirely my heart from all contaminations. That's my occupation.
Nishtha means steady.
And steadiness is manifest when anarthas are almost completely finished. The verses that are there in Nectar of, in the second chapter, Canto 1.
What are the symptoms that I don't see? You know, because I see them in Kali, but what are the symptoms maybe that still have to come up that we have to get?
Well, one lecture I recently heard from all Krishnamurti give is on this point of Ruchi that we just read, we're still at the stage where in our chanting, what to speak of extended periods of chanting, even in our chanting, periods of drowsiness, just maya. We become tired, fatigued. That the transcendental potency of the holy name is not being tasted fully. Some, and then some laxity, some unsteadiness. So this quote, laxity or intensity of effort in devotional practices, parentheses, bhajana kriya, when they become a fixed practice, manifests two types of bhakti, steady and unsteady. So there's a question here. Are the steady and unsteady referring to nishtha or bhajana kriya? So they're referring to bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya is in category of two types, anishtata and nishtata. Unsteady bhajana kriya or anishtata bhajana kriya, and on the upper end is nishtata bhajana kriya. So the next is, if so, how does anatta nivritti fit in? Anatta nivritti is what's standing between the two. Anatta nivritti is in between bhajana kriya and nishtha. In between our stage of unsteady practices, we may be making insufficient effort in our practices, or we may be making a great deal of effort in our practices, but we're not being sufficiently attentive to those things that are crowding those practices or our taste while performing those practices. So discarding the unwanted thing is anatta nivritti. Bhajana kriya is exerting an effort to perform in a fixed manner, in a rigid manner, our devotional practices steadily, in a regulated manner, punctually, very carefully, again and again and again and again, in an unfaltering manner. That's bhajana kriya. So you know, it's like they're progressing both. One's increasing, the other is also increasing. Increasing effort in anatta nivritti. To give a real simple example, practical example, you clean pots, right? So the bottom of pots, when they're neglected, become charred. Try to remove that char. Try to do it all at one time. You can, you know, take a long time. But if you do it gradually, it's all gone. And then a little spot, then you can, you know, you can just work on that little spot till it's all gone. And ever as a bhakta, I was told to do that. Remove all of, you know. Anyway, I did it. But it took a few weeks to get that, all of that off of all the pots. And I was told, but this is very nice, pat on the back. This is also cleaning your heart. So anatta nivritti is also cleaning our heart. Like that. So part of it is that, you know, just stand there and do the rubbing. Okay, the service of chanting, but then, or any direct devotional practice. But then the flaws in that practice also have to be removed. That's anatta nivritti. Alright? That's Krishna's mercy. Krishna encourages his devotees to go on. That's the little, it's a little glimmer. It's not like the carrot at the end of the stick that you never reach. It's something, the whole theme I wanted to present in this class is, this is for real. Going back to Godhead and experiencing bhava and ecstasy where there's no more anartas, the material thing is all, the struggle for happiness and material existence is actually terminatable. It's terminal by the process of devotional service. It's real. Anyone, by taking up the means, can achieve that. So the glimpse is just, I mean, it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the full thing. To encourage us. Yeah, because even that is so wonderful.
You were saying that there are some activities, particular activities, generally speaking, from back to this consistent and inconsistent, that's from where?
I don't know what you're talking about. Laxity or intensity of effort in devotional practices, bhajana kriya, when they become a fixed practice, manifest two types of bhakti, steady and unsteady. Madhurya Kandambini, chapter 4. No. This is from, I read it three times yesterday, now I've read it three times today. If so, how does an arthana vritti fit in? If not, what are they referring to? So that takes care of that question. And you also asked, who said spiritual life and laziness go ill together? The exact quote is from a Bhagavad Gita purport, easy living and Krishna consciousness go ill together. I said spiritual life and laziness. Easygoing life, laziness, and Krishna consciousness go ill together. So, I'll take the little bit easier questions and then we'll go for the harder questions. Here's a question about in the process of hearing and chanting, if you're attending a Srimad Bhagavatam class and you detect that the speaker is making a mistake in their presentation, how are you supposed to respond to that as a sadhaka? You're supposed to... Anyway, this extreme or that extreme, and what about becoming disturbed? Is it alright to be careful about hearing? Is it better not to judge the speaker? So, attentive hearing means when you hear something that appears to be not in keeping with something else that you've already heard or consistently have regularly heard, there are different things that can be done, depending upon time and circumstance. In all circumstances, respect should be there for the mere fact that someone is sitting as the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. In all circumstances, that should be there. Respect is due even to an ant when to speak of the speaker of the Bhagavatam. In some cases, you may want to ask your question later if you're not sure how to phrase your question. But in general, if you can pose the question in such a way that you leave ample room for the speaker to correct a misunderstanding that may have been unintentional, or a misstatement that may have been unintentional, or may even just be their two perfectly proper Vaishnava points of view. So something that invites a discussion on the topic but is humbly submitted, that's good. But to hear with attentiveness and discrimination, that's not something you're just supposed to, you know, sweep under the rug. Hearing attentively means you may have some question. There's some statement that I wasn't able to understand clearly. It seems that you said such and such, but I thought such and such. Another thing. Could you clarify that? Another point is a question that came up in Sanskrit Maharaj's class. Sometimes our devotional service changes and matures, and sometimes the other way around. It seems like a very nice devotional mood that we once had is no longer with us personally. How do we distinguish what's our own falling into Maya, falling back in devotional service, or just a change of circumstance that we're supposed to adjust to? One rule of thumb that I learned to appreciate, or was taught and have found it consistent in my devotional service, is simple, very simple rule of thumb. That which increases your devotional service, that's the internal energy. That which diminishes your devotional service, that's the external energy, or the influence of Maya. So if there's some change that you're trying to understand the nature of, this change, is it, you know, Maya is pulling me away from Krishna, or is it that Krishna simply wants me to engage in his service in some different manner and I have to make an adjustment? We'll see whether your devotional service is increasing or not. Yes? Yeah, it may also be an increase over here instead of over there where I was used to it. It may even, like that, just say taking some position where I'm not familiar with this whole area of service, and I kind of feel uncomfortable about it because it's a whole new type of thing. I've never done it before. And because of its unfamiliarity, I'm not feeling whatever, so happy or so like connected.
You don't necessarily worry to be Krishna conscious.
Right. Because sometimes a decrease in quantity will end up a great increase in quantity by others, by facilitating many others to do quantitatively. Those are some guidelines that you can go by yourself, and then of course consulting with senior devotees who can help you understand situations like this, you know, especially ones that know you personally and the circumstances that were there previously and the new set of circumstances. In other words, that fostering or nourishing aspect of senior devotee association can turn even a difficult situation into a very exciting situation where there's challenge. And Prabhupada indicated like this, that in order to stay fresh in devotional service, there always has to be new challenges put before us. So some situation may be arising either by Krishna's arrangement or some administrative arrangement, that a new challenge is there. And now here's a new aspect of surrendering unto Krishna that I have to learn to accomplish. And it may be a preparation for yet a third position that I'll have to take up in the future that Krishna wants me to do. So let me learn this one thing, so Krishna can use me as his instrument in some other situation in the future. Any discussion on either of these two questions? Okay, so now we'll take one of the harder ones. This is a whole week's topic. Some of the problems that devotee who's living in our, you know, modern ISKCON in North America, 1993, where the same temples and the same amount of deity worship, just like here in Gitanagari, as soon as we leave, there are very few devotees now to do all the deity worship, or in this temple or that temple or the other temple, or temples, large temples to maintain financially or to clean or to look after. And how to maintain proper attention to our sadhana so that we can remain strong. At the same time, cover the necessities. But a whole other topic is in grihastha life, how to maintain a balance between my grihastha duties financially or with the temple, and so that if there's some devotional service there, and my own devotional practices, and my association with others, preaching and so on. These are, when we start talking about anarta nivritti and what to speak of Ruchi, Asakti, and Bhava, what about all these practical things that we have to deal with all the time? This is this other side of those things that are helpful. Actually, having deities to worship, we just read, this is one of the five most important items in devotional life. So, attending to the worship of a deity is not a burden that was left to us by Founder Acharya. Prabhupada said, even when he was present, the deity should not be seen that way after the spiritual master's departure. Oh, he has left us with this big burden. We have to care for this deity all the time. As an opportunity for us to render service. So one practical comment, others to comment. One practical comment is, as far as possible, the sadhana must be there. It's not the sadhana that comes after all the other things are taken care of. So things may have to be reduced within the family or within the temple so that necessities are being cared for. And the association factor then becomes tighter because we're dependent upon so-and-so Prabhu to do this service or that service. So we want to see that so-and-so Prabhu stays strong in devotional service. Because if that Prabhu is wrong, then, you know, then what are we going to do? But not just in self-defense, but because this is what the activities of devotional service are for. And then when some new person comes along and sees, wow, these devotees are very, very tight with one another. They have such nice Vaishnava relationships, and although there's very few, they're doing so many things, and how wonderful it is. Let me see if I can... by design and by necessity. This one personal comment as a sannyasi, I can say it's a very... all the more important time for our devotees who are unentangled and detached to be able to spend time at such places and give their association and utilize the facility that the devotees who are working very hard to maintain to try to increase the preaching. I find that wherever I travel that it's really appreciated. And it gives me some sense of how Varnashram works in a mutually compatible formula, where those who are staying in one place, they're doing the business of maintaining that place, and the sannyasi's business is to give association to such persons who, because of their hard work, they're very much involved with things and material energy and money and maintenance and so on, and they're needing and should be wanting that association, and then in turn that encourages the preacher because here's some very, very nice devotees and they'll look after these persons who, after bringing them closer to Krishna, they'll look after them very nicely. So I'll just, the comment is, where persons who are guests and friends and congregational, whatever, however, whatever stage or closeness people are, it's more inviting for the preacher to come to where those places are that the friends of Krishna will be very nicely looked after. If you want more of that association in such a situation as has been described, look very nicely after one another and those who come forward to learn something about Krishna. Naturally, you invite detached persons, those that can travel and get about, to come visit more often. That'll help bring things up. Any other comments in this on this point? Anyone? Yes?
I appreciate how you come, whenever you come here, you go to that section of Harrisburg and help those people up. And I guess I see the benefit from that association of those, how they come more and more often here.
Went there with your husband just today.
Yeah. And it really helps them. They come forward because of that.
And my comment is, I'm going there because I see in them a willingness to take association. They're very, very happy to get it. The same works with temples, where the reception is very, very strong. Then not just informalities like, you know, here's your Mahaprasadam plate, but where there's eagerness for association. When there's opportunity for hearing, the devotees are eager to come together and hear.
You're saying, you know, inviting those who are unencumbered, inviting them to come as a practical example of what one can do. However, some of the other things you were saying might be considered somewhat idealistic,
right?
About, well, just everybody cooperate. Everybody cooperate and take care of each other. It's idealistic in the sense that if one of the particular temple is in a bad condition,
strained. Yeah.
How do you make that transition? Think about inviting those in.
I said scale down what you're trying to do, so it's more manageable. Okay, and then you've done that, you've scaled down and down and you're down. Well, take care of one another.
Who do you wait to burn out before you do that, or do you do it before? And it's like... One of the places where the community is already highly fractured, sometimes it's more miraculous than a miracle.
Well, of course, there's managerial answers and there's devotional answers, and I can speak from experience and from some realization on this, but where those who have stuck it out through such periods, they become very close, and they're the core of what will bring things back up again. And combine that with some senior person who can, you know, help keep all of you working nicely together, and also bring in new people who are very carefully protected from just being fodder to fill the cracks and crevices and get crunched, but they're nurtured, and because that mood is there amongst one another. Sridhar Maharaj regularly says this phrase, that nothing breeds success like success, nothing breeds failure like failure. So make a success out of something that's difficult, and it breeds success. you know, that one new person is not here. Let Mark make it. Or somebody. Maybe he's, you know, going to be flying away to Never Never Land when he leaves here. But some, you know, as persons come forward, give them the fullest opportunity and let everyone participate in that and make a success out of a difficult situation. And that will bring more success. You're dependent. You're with nothing in your hands, waiting for Krishna to put something in your hands. So when Krishna puts something in your hands, it's very valuable. Cherish it and together make, you know, make something that's very difficult turn around.
I was just listening to a little bit to the class outside.
Yeah.
So a lot of times in our temples, we're inheriting problems, like the cow problem that you might refer to,
right.
A 20-year problem that is not going to disappear overnight.
Well, many of us can identify so many inherited problems.
Yeah.
Ask Parampara, when he took over in Murari, he inherited a bunch of problems. So it's something that Sridhar Maharaj was addressing in his class this morning. It's a great legacy. So when Prabhupada was present, so many wonderful things happened, and very quickly. And as rank shrunk, now we have something very wonderful to try to maintain. So somewhere amongst the ranks, persons will have to come forward and take that up. So it requires empowerment to be successful in that effort. We don't want to, in part, improving sadhana bhakti topic is perfectly appropriate. The spiritual answer is the answer. Persons who are very, very strong sadhakas will attract others to come and associate with them. I could speak, you know, specifically on the point of Kinanagri's cow problem, of how anyway it gets into management and away from the spiritual topic. I won't mention the name, but one devotee who is contemplating coming here, and he's very capable of helping. He wants to know, if I come here, am I going to have association with someone who I can hear and chant with and not just work hard? Because I've seen others come here and work hard and have to go away. Or worse, become inimical. So hearing and chanting is where everything begins from and continues on from. Not only in progressive stages of bhakti, but in making our, you know, inherited problems solved. There's the bell. Srila Prabhupada ki.